You're listening to Crashing the Boards with Austin Johnson and Dave Popkin on Fox Sports Radio New Jersey. The guys are here to bring you the most comprehensive look at college basketball from Rutgers and Seton Hall to the national scene. Now, let's pass it off to our hosts, Dave and Austin. Take it away.
This is Crashing the Boards on Fox Sports Radio, New Jersey and Jersey Shore. Dave Popkin, Austin Johnson with you. We talk Garden State hoops every Sunday, and then we're archived as a podcast, and there's so much going on in New Jersey college basketball right now. AJ, what's going on?
Bless, man, and really exciting time of the year. No more college football, so that just accentuates college basketball, NFL playoffs. So no complaints on this side. How's everything with you?
Everything is good, except that Kadari Richmond didn't play the last game for Seton Hall, and it took them a while to figure out how to do that. They end up losing to Providence. Me personally, I'm doing great, and I get paid either way. But it's a lot better when the team wins. Believe me.
It's that part of the year where you know you got to find ways to be able to go dig deep and pull out dubs when you know people take you know nicks and dings. So interested to hear you know, despite Kadari's absence, you know Alamir Dawes really seemed like he really tried to put the team on his back and go above and beyond.
He did. Everybody in the game got off to a slow shooting start, including Al. I think he missed his first 8 shots and then basically didn't miss again for a while. Floaters, free throws, threes, handled the ball a lot. Dylan Adewusu, who we had on this show, played a good amount of point guard. And even though he had a terrible shooting day, I think he was 0 for 13, his defense, double-digit rebounds, steals, he was just being tough, you know, out there. And it was the most physical basketball game in college that I've seen this year, Big East or otherwise. These guys were really like a lot of contact on every play, bodies hitting the floor. The refs let them play. I was a little surprised that it didn't get out of hand. There were hard feelings a couple times, but Seton Hall tried to grit it out, you know, and they tried to do it without a guy that's their alpha that takes over at the end of games and at the end of halves and at the end of the shot clock and is one of the best players in the league. We talked to him on the show a couple weeks ago, and you can just see he has a quiet confidence mm-hmm. when he goes out there that he's going to get it done. And I guess he just wasn't playing well enough after shoot around. He told, you know, the coaches that he couldn't go, and he has played major minutes lately. He played 51 minutes in the triple overtime game against Creighton, where they lost, you know, heartbreaker. They scored 94 points. And he'd been playing big minutes before that and getting banged up. You know, you see, you know, a foot here and a back there. And all of a sudden, you got a couple things wrong with you and you're not close to 100%. And he had a triple double against Creighton and was at like 50%, honestly, in the game. I think it's his prerogative. And hopefully he comes back soon because they need him.
Yeah, Warriors spirit for sure, because I can only imagine you know, how bad it must have been from a pain standpoint if a guy that has showcased toughness night in and night out has come up to the decision that he's not able to go. There's nobody that wants to play more than a Kadari Richmond in those type of situations. And, you know, it provides opportunity. You know, obviously you want your best player on the floor, but then this allows, you know, a coach Shaheen Holloway to evaluate who could potentially step up and fill that void in a Kadari Richmond's absence. And you had Dre Davis adding 15 points, as you had mentioned. How about Isaiah Coleman, you know, coming out and having a pretty solid all around game in his first career start, 11 points and 5 rebounds. Those are stretch minutes that are going to be crucial as the onus is only going to increase. And that burden and expectations for him next year, you know, these are the games that you look back and build upon.
Austin, you've played with guys like this where you don't even have to call a play for him. He just scores double figures within the flow of the game, can create his own shot, scores in transition. He's athletic. He's pretty under control for a freshman. His defense was very good. Devin Carter, who's, you know, one of the best players in the Big East, did not go off in that game. Mm-hmm. And it was because of Adewusu and Coleman and guys like that on the wing, checking him and forcing him left and not giving him open threes. So I was impressed with his defense and his overall play in that game. I would love to see Malachi Brown, the backup point guard, who's like, you know, the 10th man on this team, play more. Whenever they put him in there, he's not turned the ball over. He's created opportunities for other people. He has seemed pretty poised, even though he hasn't played many minutes this year. So, you know, if it's an extended thing with Richmond, I think you'll see him get more minutes. If not, it's probably back to the bench. But, the big guys played well. Elijah Hutchins Everett was able to hit some outside shots and interior defense against Josh Oduro. Jaden Bediako's played well all season for Seton Hall. So they had their moments. You know, they nearly won the game. They were up 10 in the second half and just blew it, losing by three.
You love to see that the structure or the foundation that Coach Holloway has implemented, which is based around toughness and activity, continues to reign supreme, even with Kadari Richmond being out. And that's, I think, really relevant when you look at statistics such as, 21 points off of 14 Providence turnovers. That's just being in the right places, locking into your scouting report and really trying to up, your activity level to make up for that scoring void and that facilitation void that a Richmond is going to bring to the equation night in and night out. I love that both teams shot such a high percentage at the free throw lines. That means that you're not shooting yourself in the foot, and beating yourself by taking advantage of the easy ones. And letting this game come down to, some other things. And that's when talent takes over and Kadari Richmond not being out there, obviously. I think this is one that you pack away and you got to still be proud of the effort of your team, going into a hostile environment, trying to figure out a situation in a way to be able to pull one out, despite all the things and hostile, not having your best player out there at your disposal.
Yeah, totally. And, I think if you looked at this team before the Big East season, let's say they can get to 8-4, right? Which is reasonable. Even 7-5, with the way the schedule stacks up after that with a lot of home games, I think you would have taken it. You win the game at Providence. Okay, you lose the return match. That's a team that's on the bubble. They could be an NCAA tournament team, especially if they still had Bryce Hopkins. They would be an NCAA tournament team. Well coached, they play really hard, so I wouldn't be surprised to see them in there, and they're above Seton Hall in the computer rankings. They're in like the 40s in the net and the KenPom, and Seton Hall is like in the 60s, so it's not really an upset. I think that they played as well as they did without Richmond says a lot about the toughness of the team. Now Rutgers, coming up after this broadcast, 1 o'clock Eastern time, you've got Purdue, one of the best teams in the country. They're 18-2. They've got Zach Edey, who might be the player of the year, and they've got more than that. A very good team. They score like 85 points a game. So, against Rutgers defense, something has to give in that one.
Yeah. The ups and downs of any major basketball conference season are very apparent. And you see the huge disparity in wins on at home and on the road. And that's been the song of the season for Rutgers is they play well at Jersey Mike's Arena. When you look at, they're 9-1 at home and, not so well on the road. And that's just how it goes for most programs, regardless of the conference. And, Purdue has been a favorable matchup for them as of late. And we were talking with Ron Harper Jr. earlier today on a separate show that I was able to go on. And he just talked about that half court shot and, what was going through his mind and all that to say that there's just something magical of, the type of style and that matchup that this contest brings to the equation. Number two, Purdue coming in, with 18-2 overall record and 7-2 in the overall league mark and the reigning national player of the year. And Zach Edey, who's been balling, he'll probably get it again, because there's nobody that can really stop him. But when you game plan for this type of team and you catch a team at the right time, in the right time of day, this is a 1 p.m. start, I think that this is the type of situation that RU will look to muck it up. And it, coming off of a really tough loss, Terrence Shannon Jr. coming back into the equation at Illinois State Farm Arena, it's never really easy for any team to go in there and win. But one thing that I do think is Cliff Amore has been playing really good basketball over the last three games. I think he'll take that matchup personally. Andre Hyatt, Mawat Mack have stepped up their scoring outputs and really gone above and beyond and dug deep to, provide a scoring prowess when this team has been needed. And then you got to get, I think, a Derek Simpson, who we have on this show, and, Noah Fernandes, who played really well against Illinois, really, I think, exceed their season scoring outputs. And when you have the number two team, staring down the barrel, that's when I think those competitive juices really start to get flowing. And Those are the type of outputs that you see. So I think it'll be close. I think it'll be a ruckus environment. You have the Knights of Honor ceremony at halftime. Eddie Jordan, Mike Dabney, you know, a few names that are going into this newly minted Ring of Honor for Steve Peichel. So a lot of people are going to be excited to see that. And who knows, maybe we have another upset brewing, you know, in Piscataway, Jersey Mike's Arena.
Okay, well, good luck with that. And we'll talk to Derek Simpson of Rutgers in just a little bit about that and other subjects. Also, coming up after this break, we have Matt Alaco, one of the starters for the Princeton Tigers basketball team. They're 15-1 on the year entering this weekend, riding a 6-game winning streak, undefeated at home, one of the best mid-majors in the country, knocking on the door of the top 25. That is coming up next here on Crashing the Boards on Fox Sports Radio.
Back now on Crashing the Boards with Dave Popkin and Austin Johnson. And we're joined by a very, very special guest. They've been the talk of New Jersey and college basketball, for all of that matter. Joined by senior guard Matt Alaco. How are you doing, first and foremost?
I'm great. I appreciate you guys having me on.
So thinking about where you are present day in this season, what do you think, you know, considering this offseason, you know, has led the team to playing, you know, some of the best basketball of your career and helped you individually as well?
Yeah, I just the success we had last year, I think, just kind of fed into this year. So the new guys coming in, I think they were like, man, like, I want to experience that, you know, be a part of that winning tradition and go that far again. And then the guys returning, me being one of them, was like, I mean, let's do it again, you know? So I think in both ways, our mindset has kind of driven us to kind of keep things rolling. And you know, we're going to try our best to keep it going.
I think that there is definitely relevancy to the old adage of addition by subtraction, and a lot of people moving on from last year's team that led to a lot of opportunity for you. Considering that, what was your approach to your individual development, you know, this offseason, and how you could be a better leader for the team, you know, for this year?
You know, obviously we lost a lot of production last year, and a lot of our offense went through Tosin Awoma. I don't think I came into this year thinking I got to score this many points per game or something like that. It was always just in the flow and make the right next play. But I knew definitely the ball would be in my hands a little bit more, and just trying to be aggressive and not miss an opportunity to make a play, whether that's for myself scoring or driving and passing to one of our great shooters we have. You know, we got a lot of guys who can really shoot it and make plays. I wouldn't say I'm the only one who had that mindset too. You know, I think we've done a great job of sharing the wealth this year.
I think it's definitely been a fine balance approach, but also some quantum leaps from other members of the team. Caden Pierce has been a beast, Xavier Lee, and then individual players, I think, being superstars in their roles as well. Blake Peters and Zach Martini come to mind. What have you seen, first off, Absolutely. From Caden Pierce and Xavier Lee that's been impressive, you know, in your own eyes?
Yeah, they've been great. Obviously, you know, the basketball world got to see some of Cade last year. He had 16 rebounds in a NCAA tournament game as a freshman. Is pretty ridiculous. And he's been a beast all year, scoring more now too. He's pretty dynamic around the rim, obviously athletically pretty elite. Xavian has exploded onto the scene. I'll say, you know, I feel like that's the only word for it. He didn't play a lot last year, but those who knew, who were around the program, knew that he was going to be a problem. And he's been playing great. He's efficient and creative, and he's a tough cover, obviously, you know, as everyone has seen. So he's playing great, and, you know, we're happy to see their success.
Matt Alaco from Princeton is with us here on Crashing the Boards. You guys are 15-1 entering this weekend, only loss at St. Joe's by 4. My question is about the chemistry on this team, because you guys move the ball so great. And what are some of the things that lead to that? Is it on-court stuff, off-court stuff, coaching? Like, you guys seem like really one unit.
Yeah, it's definitely a combination of it all. And I think what's great about this team is that no one cares who has the success. You know, like, Xavier Lee has 33 points against Harvard, and the whole team is mobbing him in the locker room. You know what I mean? So the only thing that matters around here, I think, is winning. And, you know, we got 15 guys on the team who all contribute to that. You know, only, you know, I'd say maybe half, if that, have played significant minutes this year. But, like, man, our scout team has been great this year. They've been unbelievable, giving us a great look, getting us prepared. The coaching staff, obviously, has put together great plans, and I think we've been able to execute them. Again, I would just say our attitude and our approach every day has been great. And just, you know, building off each other's successes and encouraging has been a strength of ours.
You guys have one of the best starting lineups in college basketball. But it begs the question, who's next, right? Who's going to step up and fill your shoes, and who's going to play maybe some big minutes down the stretch? Because it's hard to play, you know, 35 minutes every game, especially in the Ivy League when you have tight turnarounds. Who are some of those bench guys that you think are going to step up?
Yeah, we got a lot of guys who we trust, and Galen Davis has come in and played well, and you know, he kind of broke out a little bit against St. Joe's, gave us a chance to win that game, our only loss. He came in and made some big shots. And then we got, you know, Jacob Huggins, a freshman off the bench who brings a lot of energy and is a bigger body. And, you know, I'm just naming a couple other players. Darius Kukwazi, who hasn't played a ton in his career, has had some back problems, but he's back playing. So, you know, again, we love to see all those guys playing succeed, and they're going to come in and help us.
Evie is the head that wears the crown, and the more success that you have, the better and better opposing teams are going to try to play against you. When adversity hits, what's the messaging like in that huddle and in the locker room?
I would say that despite our record, you know, we've faced a ton of adversity. You know, we've won a lot of games, so people think, you know, maybe they haven't had it tough, but we've been in some tight games, and we've started off the year playing 5-6 games in a row on the road in some good environments. So it's always just keep our cool, calm. You know, we're always going to win the game. We could be up or down. Just get to the next play, stay together, talk things out. And we've had a great approach of just, you know, like, mistakes are going to happen no matter what, you know, and especially how we're playing now in league too. Like, it's going to be a grind every game. So just, you know, flipping that switch, it's over with, move on, and let's get to the next play has always been our approach.
I think that term grinding is synonymous with a guy like Brett McConnell. And I selfishly root for you guys because of the Rutgers connection that I had with him. He was one of the up-and-comer managers for Rutgers basketball when I was getting recruited there. What has he meant to you and your development and just the team overall?
He's been huge. BMAC, Coach McConnell was like one of the first guys who I was in contact with before I even came here. You know, he would reach out to me. So he's been great. He's putting together plans and everything, and he's got like individual tendencies locked down. And I mean, he's so detailed, but like his delivery of everything, you know, when to be stern and when to, you know, maybe put your arms around guys and then celebrate things when they do well. He's got a great feel for, you know, coaching and, he's doing great. He's been an unbelievable help in the time I've been here. So, very appreciative. And, you know, I don't want to say it, you know, 'cause we love him here, but you know, I could definitely see him running his own program someday, having a head job. So, we love BMAC here. He's been unbelievable for us.
Princeton guard Matt Alaco is with us here on the Sweet 16 team and second team all Ivy last year. This year, averaging about 14 points a game, shooting 43% from downtown. He is from Hilliard, Ohio. So who did you root for when you were growing up, Matt? Maybe a college team or player or a pro team?
Not Ohio State, believe it or not. We're a Notre Dame family. At least the men in our family were Notre Dame fans. I had a couple uncles played football there. My Uncle Frank in California, he lives out there, was a quarterback in the 70s, won a national championship, actually started. Joe Montana was his backup, if you could believe it. Frank got hurt, and then Joe Montana took off. So he likes to credit himself for blessing the game of football with Joe Montana. But Notre Dame fans growing up, pro teams were, my dad is a New York sports guy. He grew up in North Jersey, so big Yankee family, diehard Yankees. Other than that, we kind of, you know, forget the other teams, but when the Yankees do well, the Alaco family's happy.
You had your freshman year wiped out, Matt, due to COVID, as everybody did. The Ivy League had a one-time waiver that let the seniors, you know, get an extra year, but that's not going to be granted to other classes. So as this year starts to wind down, have you given thought as to, you know, would you want to keep playing college basketball someplace or pro, or maybe just go into the real world and get a job?
Yeah, the plan is definitely to play college, pro at some point, likely play another year in college, I would say. Outside of that, I haven't thought anything about where I would go, something like that. I'll worry about that after the season. You know, we're just, this whole team is just tunnel vision on this year. So, you know, hopefully we finish our great year we're having, and we go far as we can. And, you know, when that time comes, I'll start to think about that.
As you guys come barreling down the stretch here, you just blew out Harvard, and thinking about the Ivy League tournament and all that, how far can this team go?
As far as our legs will take us, you know, I mean, geez, we keep playing like this and we stay together and defend and share the ball. I mean, you know, I think our biggest opponent is ourselves. You know, obviously I'm not going to come on here and say like, well, this team I think could give us a run for our money. You know, I think we have a heck of a team, you know, and I think when we're playing at our best, we can beat anybody. You know, I said that last year before the NCAA tournament started, and I believe it. So, you know, and I think that's how the rest of our team thinks too. You know, we got a heck of a team. So, we're like, what the heck? Let's go do this. Let's go as far as we can.
We talked a lot about New Jersey basketball on this show. And, you know, you guys have played some of the teams in the state. You played Rutgers. You played Monmouth. We floated the idea to some of the coaches about having some kind of a tournament or an MTE or something where the New Jersey teams can get together and make it a big deal, you know, maybe in non-conference schedule. That's something that you would, you know, be in favor of and I think is a good idea.
For sure. 100%. We're always looking for those in-state games. We love it. I haven't experienced a bunch of them, you know, outside of just Monmouth and Rutgers, but I think it's a great idea. I love what the Philly teams do, you know, the Big Five tournament. So I think, you know, Jersey basketball should do the same. It's unfortunate that this my last year here. So I probably won't be a part of it if that happens, but I'm a huge advocate for that.
When Coach Henderson or the other coaches bring in recruits and they have them meet, you know, the older guys like yourself, what do you tell them about the school, the staff, and just the experience that you've had?
Yeah, obviously the basketball part of it is a huge part of the decision. It's a very successful and storied tradition here. You know, obviously with the Princeton offense and Coach Carrill and Bill Bradley and those guys. So, you know, if you want to be a part of a great basketball tradition, then this is a great spot. But also, obviously, the academics, you know, are going to take you places. So the recruiting line is always it's not a 4-year decision to come here. It's a 40-year decision. So especially I can speak from experience with the basketball program. The alumni connections are endless, and there's people who, you know, are running their own businesses or up and coming startups, this and that, CEOs, who will always find the time to get back to you or reach out. They go hand in hand, athletics and academics here. I don't think there's anywhere better.
Love the tunnel vision and understand and respect. It's a game by game basis, but have you given any thought to what life outside of the game of basketball could mean for Matalako one day?
Not too much. That's all I've known, you know, as long as I've lived. So this college career is unfortunately coming to an end, but we're going to keep on pushing until it's over. And then I would love to play professionally. That's always been my dream. I don't know where I would end up, but definitely play for as long as possible. After that is up in the air. I'm not too sure, but would like to stay involved in sports. I think probably, I don't know about coaching or like front office stuff like that. I don't know. I haven't given that much thought, but I don't know. I like to say I'll cross that bridge when I get there, but it's creeping up on me, so I should probably give it more thought.
You'd be a good broadcaster.
Appreciate that.
Much respect to you, man, and keep crushing. And we look forward to watching Princeton do big things in the remaining portions of league play and going into the NCAA tournament. Thank you for the time, man.
Of course, appreciate it. Thank you.
That's Matalako joining us here on Crashing the Boards with Dave Popkin and Austin Johnson. We'll be right back. back now on the Crashing the Board show, joined by a special guest, Derek Simpson of the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. Rutgers is 10-8 right now, and in the midst of the Big Ten season, by the time everything airs, they will be competing against Purdue. First and foremost, Derek, we appreciate you joining us. How's it going?
It's going well, Austin. You know, just day-to-day grind every day. I'm trying to get better with the team. I'm just trying to improve, stuff like that. So, yeah, everything's been going good.
You were able to take a significant jump in regards to the expectations and having a lot more onus on, you know, being a leader on this team and having the ball in your hands a lot more each and every possession. So, you know, as it stands right now, how are you feeling about how things are going with the team? And, you know, what are some things that you would like to see you guys to continue to improve on as the season progresses?
You know, I wouldn't like our record to be what it is. I think that we are a little bit better than what our record shows. I think we are better than what our record shows. The ball being in my hands, you know, it's a blessing. And, you know, just trying to lead the guys, you know, everybody pitches in a little bit. You know, we got a brand. So like, you know what I'm saying? This group is kind of new. Not new anymore, but, you know, from last year, it's a totally different team. And I think the first couple weeks of the season, you know, really, they were kind of tough for us. We hit a little adversity and, you know, we're just trying to get it back together now. And, you know, we're going to keep grinding every day. We're going to keep getting better. You know, a lot of us watched a lot more film. A lot of us have been in the gym a lot more. You know, we're just trying to get better as the day go by, put some wins together and, you know, just go on a little roll.
Every season has ups and downs, and it's a roller coaster ride for any high Division I basketball player. But it's nice to have a family influence and somebody who's lived it before. Your father is at every game, Ron Simpson. What does he mean to your development, and how do you rely on him, you know, when things get tough to, you know, see you through it?
You know, he was way more tough on me in high school. I will say that. To high school was a rough time with him. You know, he was a lot more not negative, but like constructive criticism. I'll say that a lot more of that. You know, once college came, you know, he's still doing the same thing, but it's in more of an aspect, you know, now where he kind of understands, you know, the level is higher. You know, the play has to be at a high level for you to do very well. And, you know, now, you know, ever since I got to college, it's been just motivation for me. We talk after the night after every game, you know, we have conversations about the game, what was going through the mind. My biggest thing for him is to tell me what his perspective was from the stands and stuff like that. You know, you see stuff on film from the cameras high up, but what are the people seeing in the crowd? And, you know, sometimes he'll be like, I'm not even going to talk to you from a parent perspective. I'm going to talk to you from a fan perspective. And then he'll be like, I'll talk to you from a parent perspective, not a fan perspective. So, you know, different, you know, different ways, you know, to hear that kind of stuff from him, you know, it really does help my game. A lot of lessons have been learned so far this year. So yeah, he's been nothing but help.
I realize that the numbers are up and they're speaking volumes in regards to the averages that you're putting up. And despite the outcome of victories and losses, those are going to come and go. I always recognize and appreciate that you have an unwavering confidence in your ability and a next play mentality. Where does that originate from? You know, is that something that you developed as a kid? And, you know, how has that helped you in your collegiate career thus far?
Yeah, next play mentality. You know, I've kind of developed that as a young kid. I've always, I would say more so once I, you know, started watching high level basketball, probably middle school era. You know, I got to watch a little bit more NBA college games. And, you know, around that time, my dad has an AAU organization too. So I was able to, you know, talk to some higher up players. I've always played up as a young kid. And my dad has always thrown me in the fire. And that's one thing I've learned from older kids watching them. You know, a lot of them were next play players and they didn't care what happened last play. You know, we're just worried about the next one. And, you know, you can't worry about the past, man. You just got to live in the present. And, you know, if something happens, just move on from it and just keep going. You know, me being able to, you know, tell the guys to just move on. You know, I think this year we have gotten better at that. In the beginning, you know, I think we struggled with moving on from what just happened in the past plays. You know, we're slowly getting better at it. You know, we're just going to keep getting better at it, stuff like that. But, man, I learned that at a young age. Really, my father, my mom, too, you know, my family, they always told me, you know, don't live in the past. Keep moving on and, you know, take day by day.
Derek, I'm interested in the mental aspect of the game as well. Fans see you miss a shot, make a shot, that kind of thing, make an assist. But from a mental standpoint, how much is asked of players in terms of absorbing a scouting report? And like, for example, how many plays do you have on offense that you have to know where to be, like when you're the one versus when you're the two?
Scouting reports, you know, once the game's over, you kind of throw that whole scouting report out the way And, you know, in college basketball, you play every 3 days. I mean, it's basketball, every basketball, you play every 3 days pretty much. So the 2 days before we have a game, you know, we put in specific plays and stuff like that, specific scouting reports on specific players. And, you know, all that is attention to detail, being able to know where you are in the right spot and stuff like that. And on the point on the, being able to, you know, be in different positions like the one and the two, I will say that has been one of the most interesting things for me this year personally, because we've always had a two guard set now. So either one of us, me, Noah, J. Mike, Austin, like one of us could either run the one or a two, to be honest. I've always been a one kind of guy, but this year I've definitely developed a habit of kind of being in the two spot every once in a while. So it's definitely been a learning process for that. You know, the two spot is kind of either corner, wing. You don't always have the ball in your hands. It is interesting to learn, and it's a good trait to have, you know, moving forward, because an NBA professional and stuff like that, you can kind of be wherever. And, you know, this year I've definitely been able to play the wing and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're like a mic check player. 1-2, 1-2. Hey, who's your funniest teammate?
It's Antonio Chol, my guy. He's in my class too, my sophomore class. We hang out a lot. I would say he is the funniest individual on the team. You know, he kind of like, we're in the locker room. You know, he's always got joy. He's always trying to laugh. He's always trying to crack a joke. Yeah, I will say he's definitely the funniest guy.
You brought up the three guard rotation, three really good guards, two spots. What do you think are, you know, some of the greatest qualities of playing with a Noah Fernandes and a Jamichael Davis that you've been able to take away and, you know, sharpen your own skill set based off of, you know, their influence?
Noah and Austin, they're the older guys. You know, Austin's a little old, Noah's a little old, they're up there and stuff, you know. So they've been through a lot, way more, you know, a lot than I have. And, you know, I told J. Mike kind of in the beginning, you know, let's just learn as much as we can from them. You know, they've been through it. And, man, like playing beside Noah, you know, I've learned that as a small guard, you kind of have to, you have to work a little bit more. And, you know, I wouldn't say I'm kind of on the smaller, I'm not as small as him, but I'm 6'3", you know, I don't weigh that much. And, you know, Noah's kind of the same area as me. And, you know, I've kind of watched him maneuver his way around defenses, be able to, you know, use his size to his advantage. And, you know, we played against 6'5", 6'7", dudes all the time. And that's just what the league is, you know. And, you know, he gets as low as possible. And, you know, I've watched a lot of the things he's done in practice, you know, leading up to the season. And he was always just a pest, you know, as a small guard. You know, if you're not a pest, you know, and you're not disrupting, you know, the ball as it gets low and stuff like that, you know, that's your advantage right there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, J. Mike really does do it very well, too. I will say he's very quick on his feet. You know, he gets very low. And, you know, I think we have a really quick group of guys, like a lot of quick to the ball and stuff like that. So, you know, just competing against them, too, has been some of the best, you know, experience that I've had, because last year I didn't have another guard next to me that was my size, that was really like quick like me. You know, Jalen Miller was he was the other guard, but you know, this year we got really like quick guys. So, you know, I learned a lot from playing against them, you know, guarding them and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's been nothing but great experience from the guys.
How far can this team go? I mean, you've had your ups and downs, kind of a roller coaster. You guys beat Seton Hall, who looks like a tournament team right now, and a couple other good wins. But what do you need to do, and how far can this team go?
I think we can go as far as we want to. It's all on us. And, you know, the coaches, they put great scouts together. They put great game plans together. But they're not on the court shooting the shot, passing the ball, getting the rebound. You know, it's really us 15, 17 guys that are really going to have to decide that. And, you know, I really do believe we can go as far as we want. We got to put a little bit more work in, a little bit more effort, you know, individually. Everybody's got to get better. You know, it is what it is. And, you know, hopefully we can put some, you know, put some effort in, you know, coming up this Sunday. You know, every game is a new chapter, you know, as coach says. And, you know, it's kind of really helped us, you know, move on from the past and just kind of move to the next game and, you know, move to the next practice and stuff like that. So, you know, practices have been way better for us. I think they've been way more competitive. I think if you come see a practice now compared to maybe, you know, first couple of weeks of the season, you know, I think we've changed a lot. We've approached things a lot differently. We're just trying to get better day by day, man. That's it.
What is the difference between high school and AAU ball right now? I know, you know, you had a terrific high school career and then also played AAU in South Jersey. How does the play differ And which do you think helped prepare you a little bit more for college ball?
I want to say high school definitely helped me prepare more because it's more structured. It's more of a team thing. I'm not saying that AAU is not a team thing, but AAU is a free-for-all kind of, you know, it's just in a free-for-all environment. It just is what it is. AAU is where you showcase your talent. And a lot of, you know, a lot of kids thrive in AAU because it showcases their talent. They're able to run up and down, act crazy, you know, do a lot of different things. High school, now I think in this generation is translating more to the college level just because of the structure that comes along with it. You know, college coaches, you know, they like structure. They like kids who are able to listen, but go on the court and, you know, play their butt off. And, you know, AAU was my last year of AAU. My junior year was probably the best year I've had just because it taught me how to play like just wild basketball. Just go out there, play as hard as you can, just hoop, you know, don't worry about anything else. And, you know, it also introduced me to the shot clock because I played on the circuit. So that was also very useful. And New Jersey, we don't have shot clocks. It's bad. We need to get a shot clock because people just hold the ball. And, you know, high school, you know, it teaches you how to move the ball. It teaches you kind of discipline. And I had a coach in high school who was really into the discipline stuff. He liked the ball movement. He liked, you know, defensive strategies. He really focused on defense and stuff like that. And, you know, AAU is just, you know, it's just a wild scene, man. You don't know what you walk into an AAU tournament, you have no idea what you're going to see. You're going to see people dunking at 7 a.m., people getting dunked on at 7:30 a.m. You know, it's kind of a wild scene. But high school, I think, was, you know, great for me because I can handle the structure. I've always been kind of a structure guy growing up, and I've been able to, you know, listen to coaches and kind of play within a system pretty well. So.
I've grown to appreciate the fact that you're a South Jersey dude, and I'm mm-hmm. from Philly. So a lot of people associate people from South Jersey and Philadelphia together. Did you have any rooting interest in any of the Philadelphia sports teams, or who do you root for when it comes to NFL, NBA, things of that nature?
Yeah, I'm an Eagles fan.
Nice.
I'm gonna be honest. I've never really been a Sixers fan. I go off what my dad likes. I'm gonna be honest. And my pops, he always loved the Eagles, even though he's a North Jersey guy. You know, he's always loved the Eagles. Not really a hockey, baseball. My mom's a Phillies fan. Well, I lied. She's a Yankees fan, but she's always rocked with the Phillies since she's moved out. Like since she's the lately. And you know, my sister's a big Phillies fan and stuff like that. So I have really mixed fan bases in my family. It's kind of crazy. I'm going to be kind of crazy. But the one team I rock with is the Eagles. I'll say that. That's my one team right there.
Good answer. So, as do I.
Yeah,
as disappointing, disappointing into the season, but I'm still cautiously optimistic about us being able to bounce back next year. A lot of excitement about not only Rutgers football, but Rutgers football in the NFL, Jonah Jackson with the Lions, Bo Melton with the Packers, Isaiah Pacheco, another South Jersey product doing his thing with the Chiefs. Keeping up with any of those guys? And, you know, how cool is it to see some guys go to the next level and really start to stand out?
Man, I was just watching the Chiefs game the other day, and, you know, you watch the way Isaiah Pacheco runs and you like, man, that boy works hard. And that is the pure definition of a Rutgers athlete right there. Mm-hmm. Everybody that comes to Rutgers, regardless of what athletics you play, you know, it's just like the work here is very hard. And a lot of, you know, Coach Peichel, you know, obviously Shiano, you know, he's recruiting guys that work hard, man. And that's one thing I've noticed about Rutgers. There's a lot of people who are down to earth here who are just willing to put in the work to be however great they want to be. And, you know, it's really shown in Rutgers basketball these past couple of years. You know, except next year, you know, we'll have the, you know, one of the top recruiting classes in the country. But, you know, these past couple of years that never been on that stage. Nobody's ever, you know, sat on Twitter and said Rutgers this, Rutgers this, Rutgers that. It's always been, oh, Rutgers will be Rutgers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just the way Rutgers' reputation is. So, you know, it's good to see, you know, dudes like that from Rutgers, you know, competing at such a high level, man, like playoff football, man, you can't get better than that. Can't get better than that. And, you know, for them, you know, to win a bowl game, you know, the past couple of years, NCAA tournament bids, you know, even other sports, you know, lacrosse, you know, all the other sports and just working hard and just trying to get better and trying to build this program up and just keep going and going and going. So it's good to see. It's fun to see too. So.
Couldn't agree more. And pivoting quickly to what's on, you know, what's upcoming next game, coming off the heels of a tough one at State Farm Arena out in Champaign, Illinois. Illinois is looking like one of the best offenses, not only in the Big Ten, but in the country. They got a lot of options. And then you got to prepare for number two, Purdue, 18-2 overall, 7-2 in the league, and the reigning national player of the year in Zach Edey. We were just chopping it up with Geo Baker and Ron Harper Jr., and they talked about the reason that Rutgers always plays Purdue so tough is the scouting and being prepared. They like to play a lot of drop defenses, and you're able to attack that getting to the mid-range. What do you think it will take for, you know, the team to come out and have success against Purdue? What's going to be a heck of an environment?
Yeah, man. Oh, Jersey Mike's is going to be rocking. I'll tell you that right now. But, you know, it's not going to take just me. It's not going to take just Cliff. It's not going to take just Andre. It's going to take every guy who steps on that court, tucks their jersey in. You know, it's going to, you know, 50-50 balls are going to be very important, you know. Rebound is going to be very important. You know, the little things, I you know, I'm a little things guy. I've always said, I've always been the type to be like, you know, if you dive on the floor two times and they don't, you know, that causes a difference. You know, rebounding, if you're plus five on the boards at half, that causes a difference. You know, points are, you know, what you want to do, but, you know, I think every guy on this team, you know, this upcoming game is going to really have to put a little extra in. You know, we're really going to have to focus on the scout. And, you know, that's one thing, you know, that coaches really thrive on is, you know, pay attention to who you're guarding, be in the right gaps, you know, listen and practice, pay attention to detail. You know, we've had a, you know, we're going to have a week to prepare pretty much for them. And, you know, we started scout on Monday and, you know, it's just been rolling ever since. And, you know, we'll have a lot of knowledge on them and stuff like that. And, you know, hopefully we come out and just, you know, get the game plan going, you know, come out with a W and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Awesome, man. Chopping it up with sophomore guard Derek Simpson from the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. We truly appreciate the time. Lastly, from my end, how's it been this year playing with Cliff Amore? Obviously, he's been phenomenal protecting the rim up and down from an offensive standpoint. But what have you learned from his ability to push through some of the ups and downs along with playing with, you know, Mawat Mag, who's dealt with some adversity?
Yeah, man. Cliff, I would say, man, he really takes a beating during games, you know, during practices. And, you know, that's one guy that, you know, he kind of gets up, he shakes it off, he just goes to the next play. I will say, you know, he's one of the most athletically gifted players I've ever played with. And, you know, he told me from the jump this year, like, you put it on the rim, I'm going to get it. So, you know, lately I think I've been doing a lot better with that, finding him on lives and stuff like that, getting him going. Yeah, with lobs, bounce passes, you know, he's been shooting the ball, you know, these past two games, past three games, he's been playing very, very good. You know, hopefully we can lead this going into the next game. And so is Mawat, man. You know, Mawat, he's battled a lot this past year, obviously with his injury and stuff like that, but nothing but good things from both of them this past year. You know, they've just been working. And, you know, hopefully, you know, by the end of the year, they can look back and be like, you know, I played some of the best basketball I've ever played. And, you know, the stats are showing it right now. And, you know, we're going to keep it going. I'm going to tell them keep it going. And, you know, everybody else will tell them keep it going and stuff like that. So,
love it. Well, Rutgers going to look to keep it going this Sunday, January 28th at 1 p.m. against number two, Purdue. If history is any indicator, it's going to be a really good game. Derek Simpson, sophomore guard from Rutgers, really appreciate the time joining us on this show.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Awesome stuff. We'll be right back.
Dave and Austin back with you, crashing the boards, talking New Jersey college hoops. And AJ, what a show. Players only show, not like the old jackets that the old guys wear down on the boardwalk. But, you know, two terrific college basketball players and great guys. Matt Alaco from Princeton, Derek Simpson from Rutgers. You can tell those guys would be successful at whatever they try.
Insightful ambassadors of the game. Really, really thoughtful conversations, talking about, you know, just outside of the X's and O's in addition to what's been helping them throughout their college careers, their individual teams. Excited to watch their journey, not only this season, but as they continue in the game of life.
All right, so I'm headed to Chicago. Seton Hall will be at DePaul on Tuesday night. Obviously, a must-win game. DePaul struggling big time. They fired their coach, Tony Stubblefield. Matt Brady as the interim. They're like 300 and something in the computer ranking, so it's a game Seton Hall has to win. And then, you know, you right after this broadcast at just before 1 o'clock, have the Purdue game with Jerry Recco, the play-by-play and color call of that one. So should be exciting. And we'll talk more mid-majors next week. We'll get into the Pirates a little bit more and look forward to doing it.
Likewise. Enjoy that trip out to Chicago. It's never easy, despite the record, going up against DePaul. So hopefully, obviously, it's a positive outcome for you guys. And we'll see how RU does against number two Purdue coming into town.
You got it. So for Austin Johnson, I'm Dave Popkin. We thank our production crew as well, our head coach Mike Cohen, Jack Myatt, and Alexander the Great, Alex Garrett. We'll talk to you next Sunday at 11. You can check out our show anytime on the Fox Sports Radio New Jersey website as an archive podcast. So long, everybody.